Welcome to episode 4 of the Pipe and Slippers Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Roger Kirby, and as always, I'm joined by Stephen Rudkin.
Good afternoon, Roger.
How are things?
Pretty good. Just about got over my cold from last week, so all raring to go for the Sunday week 2 action.
Yes, it can't come soon enough. Thursday in the books now. Any major takeaways from Thursday night football?
Well, from me personally to start with, it's a long wait when you've played the Steelers defense in 4 of the leagues we're in and you come away with nil point, 0 from Thursday night. So I'm desperate for Sunday to come around and get some points on the board after missing out there.
Well, speaking of defenses, the Klumbergs left the Ravens on their bench.
Ooh.
And they have got the Seahawks, so you'd expect that to be, you know, that's a big load of chunk of points, and he's teeing himself up nicely to be winning an award potentially this week.
The Ravens defense, in fact, the highest points scorers of the week with 15, just Pippin, Flacco, and Tucker, believe it or not. So.
Yeah, and that was Tucker was on the footballers there. And that's put them in a real nice spot to start off when your kicker's getting 14 points.
It was a bit of a slow game for fantasy scoring-wise. I was quite pleased that I managed to get 10.7 out of Le'Veon Bell somehow, even though not managing for the Steelers to actually score and make much of a run in the game after they went behind from the few turnovers that led to scores for the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've not really had an awful lot of time to catch up on it. From the bits I've read, it sounded as if the Ravens played pretty strong, stout defence and then were effective on offence. Not spectacular, but just effective, and the 2 touchdowns from Owen Daniels. I mean, God knows what happened. There was a certain breakdown in communication in that backfield because he was wide open twice.
He was wide open, but it's almost like they'd been running to the strong side most of the time, and it was almost the first time they almost went back the other way and caught the Steelers off guard a bit from just being quite obvious most of the time with their offence, and then just going back the other way to Daniels. And I was really expecting Pitter to have had a big game, but as it turned out, he was covered and not targeted too much, and it was Daniels that came away with the big fantasy points of the week.
Yeah, that Kubiak offense certainly seems to be either hit or miss. There's no happy medium with it. You're either, you know, they're either really, really super efficient or they're struggling to, you know, make yards. It relies so heavily on all the play action passing and moving the pocket a little bit. If they're not able to do that, they really do struggle.
That was it. Not spectacular, but got the job done. And the Ravens D was really looking quite aggressive and quick up front almost.
The highlights I saw, Doomerville looked pretty sharp, I think is probably the best way of putting it. He seemed to be diving around and making plays.
They just didn't allow, it was almost like they didn't allow the Steelers to get back into it after they got behind, but it seemed like it was more on the Steelers' offense just kind of went flat again and couldn't manage to move the ball and get back into the end zone to catch up.
Well, am I right in saying that they didn't run an awful lot of no huddle early doors, which was supposed to be the big hallmark of their offense this year, when Haley was going to kind of turn it over to Big Ben a little bit more, and they were going to, you know, go up tempo and beat teams that way.
Yeah, it did seem like a slow game. I mean, it was a bit odd. There was only because there was long, slow drives on both sides actually in the first half. So a lot of clock was used up, and yeah, that's very much against the so-called fast tempo, no huddle offense that we were led to believe was going to take place. But maybe they thought that it would be one of those games they'd keep close and it would come down to one of those tight kind of 10-13 games like they're normally used to. But with the turnovers, it just meant the Ravens pulled away and that was it.
Well, both teams are 1-1. and they move on, and that's going to keep that division, nice and tight. Just as the Bengals fall this weekend.
Yeah. So 1-1, and but yeah, it was. I think Bengals do look like, from if you just take from the first couple of games, Bengals do look the stronger in that division so far.
Yeah, and I think on paper as well, they look the stronger. And despite maybe not having the most flamboyant of quarterbacks out of the four within that division.
Good old Big Red. So, has Thursday night football in the books?
Indeed. Now, I know the next segment, we don't really want to get too bogged down in the politics of it all, but from a fantasy perspective, I think it's definitely worth touching upon.
Yes, indeed. So, obviously, a few new stories this week. The latest one just coming
just
out.
Just a few.
Generally all non-football related, unfortunately. On Friday, news coming out that Adrian Peterson is involved in situation with his son, and as I say, we don't really want to talk too much about the whole situation and everything around it, but more from a football fantasy perspective, what does that do?
Well, it he's certainly means deactivated. That I have an easier week.
Yes, indeed. every cloud.
Yeah, not that was obviously the first thing that I was thinking about, but I'd far prefer to face CJ Spiller and Mark Ingram than having to face CJ Spiller and Adrian Peterson. But that does open the door.
Especially based on going up against the Patriots defence, who did let Miller and Moreno run all over them last week. So.
Touching on that, I wonder how much that is a product of that spread offence that Miami are now running under Bill Lazor. So, they're essentially running that Philadelphia offence where they spread it out and it is a run first.
Opens up a lot of lanes and space.
Yeah, without a doubt.
It's obviously going to benefit you and your matchup. On a similar vein, it was quite interesting to see a tweet from Roddy White, who he said, which I'm sure he'll probably end up having to apologise for this, no doubt, but saying, I'm sure the real victim of this story is my fantasy team, because I'm without Peterson. So, classic from Roddy there. But so with AP definitely out for this week, and who knows for how long going forward, but obviously brings into question what the Vikings will do there in the backfield. And you've got Matt Asiata, who did well last season when he came in for a couple of games for AP.
And a certain somebody on this podcast picked up.
Yeah, I saw the news drop and I didn't even know that he was going to be out, and I just saw the report about it and I thought, oh, he ain't playing this week, let me see what I can do and get somebody there. So picked up Asiata as quickly as I could. However, I think the people that there's a lot of talk fantasy wise about whether it's him or there's McKinnon who might take a few carries as well.
Yeah, I've seen that name drop a couple of times into my email chains and some of the other leagues that I've seen.
The only other thought there is obviously will they look to put Cordell Patterson in the backfield a bit more.
Yeah, it's very true. Norv, is notorious for dialing creative plays up. So, every loss of somebody does open up an opportunity for somebody else.
He rushed for over 100 yards last week. So, maybe the Kloonbergs are licking their lips and quite excited by this news. So.
Indeed. What about the drug policy news that came out?
It's something we've been expecting obviously for a while, that there's going to be potential changes and just when it's going to happen and would they backdate it, and as far as we're aware right now that looks like it's going to happen, and a few tinkering with the policy means you're going to have some players being reinstated, potentially not for week 2 action, but now it's looking like for week 3 is highly likely.
Yeah, for anybody that took a bit of a punt on some of these guys that were out and now potentially sitting there rubbing their hands together and thinking, wow, that was well worth a speculative effort.
Yeah, I mean, obviously one of the key names that people talk about is Welker. Now, he wasn't somebody, because he was only getting a 4-game ban, it seems generally he didn't actually get dropped by whoever drafted him.
Yeah.
And was happy to hold on for him for that length of time. So I'm almost a bit annoyed at that situation, because I was hoping to find out whether he plays this week, but so it gives me a headache as whether Emmanuel Sanders will have many targets going forward. So
he looked dynamite in the first week, so
he did, but then you
offense more potent, you would have thought.
When you put Welker back in there, is he going to get enough targets to
make him
worth playing? He certainly drops down a level from more to a flex player.
Yes, I tend to agree with that, but then I think the flip side of that is by having Welker out there and another body, you know, a proven body, especially red zone target, drawing, potential coverage, does it open things up? But it's one of those, that's going to have to obviously play out.
Sure. And obviously then, a bit confusing really with the Josh Gordon potential reinstatement, because by all accounts the changes to the policy should really let him back straight away, because he would have never actually failed a test if they increased the marijuana limit. So a bit confusing there that there's talk about it being just reduced to a 10-game suspension.
But Wyatt could have him back.
Wyatt, yeah, he jumped on that news earlier in the week. And
yeah, he was all over it.
You looking for that? So if he comes back week 11, but then it'll be... See, he obviously did all right last year, scoring highly. When you think who's going to throw the ball to him and what offense will look like by week 10.
You sent a tweet out this week or put a message on one of the boards and said, yeah, it's fine, you've picked it up, but who's thrown to him?
I mean,
coverage.
It's a long way off at the moment. Obviously, with another 9 games, what will happen there? Will it be Manziel by that time?
Got to assume so, haven't you?
But yeah. Good move from Wyatt there to pick up Gordon, and I think that's the only other thing fantasy wise. Will Scandrick make much of a difference to improve the Cowboys defense?
Yeah, I don't think there'll be many much action on the waiver wire for that one, but less said about that the better. Sorry, Tony.
So
moving on.
I think that's about it for the news that we were just going to cover that's happened since our last podcast. And then just looking ahead to this weekend of matchups, just touching on some of the activity that's happened in Move the Sticks League this week, with a few waiver wire pickups. So first of all, we had Carl Scratch and Sniff coming off a week one loss, has picked up Jacksonville's Alan Hearns and in place of Tavon Austin.
He's plugged him straight in there.
Yeah, it's
I don't know. It's one of those.
The only benefit is there's still Shorts is not back. There's some other injuries potentially that means he's going to get game time, but
he's still got Chad Hennington.
Who knows? So. Tony with the playmakers.
Did you just latex that?
Did that music come through on your end?
Yeah, baby. A bit of Bruno Mars.
That's from the chart on the Game Centre on our league page. Bit of a technical thing there. Trying to get rid of these adverts. But, moving on. Tony with the playmakers, adding Malcolm Floyd coming off his 11-point week for the Chargers last week.
Yeah, I've got him with the other leagues, and he's going to be a real good potential wide receiver 2 flex option going forward.
I think what's always interesting is obviously you want to pick up these guys and put them in your squad, but it's who you actually get rid of. Is it more value than the guy you had? I mean, for example, for Tony, he's dropping Cody Latimer, who's got a great upside going forward, but obviously with the Welker news, that puts him further down the chart.
In a dynasty league, potentially, you know, he's a great stash until next year.
We've got Anthony coming off a win last week. He picked up Justin Forsett for Ray Rice, so just a Ravens backfield switch.
Sensible pickup, can't really argue with that one.
He plugged him in his flex position and picked up 7.2. So
I did the exact same thing in another league. So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and criticise something I've done myself.
It's a tidy thing, but obviously he's got that decision, which I think maybe came a bit clearer that Pearce has kind of been reinstated a bit after his fumble.
He's been taken out of the doghouse until next time.
Yeah. However, that does mean Anthony had Pearce on his bench, so he's kind of left 3 points there on the bench with Pearce getting 10.3. So some headaches there going forward for Anthony, of which one to play each week.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a bit of a minefield in this talk. I'm not quite sure the rookie's name, but there's big things being spoken about the third running back on the roster there.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name, but it's also a very difficult one to pronounce, so we'll leave it for now. obviously, we've got Wyatt. He changed defence, going for the Bucks this week and dropping the Vikings.
Shrewd move, given the fact that they're going to be facing Marty Schottenheimer. Not Marty Schottenheimer, Brian Schottenheimer. And
that'll be
woeful.
2 weeks in a row, Wyatt's picked up the team playing against the Rams.
Yeah, it's very sensible, especially if Hill doesn't make it, which there's talk that he's travelling, but NFL insider Ian Rappaport, I read a tweet that said that he's travelled, but there's no guarantee that he's going to start.
Also, Wyatt busy once again, changing his kicker, going for Bullock of the Texans, playing out there in Oakland.
I think he's going to just play the matchups on that, which with the kickers and the defences, which I think is a sound move. It really does allow you to go and attack that draft early doors and just play the matchups with those kickers.
Yeah, I think this league was definitely one of the ones out of the six we've done where more often than not the kicker and defence were taken from rounds 13, 14, 15.
There was only a few that reached on those elites.
I think that
elites.
Was more from the... And then a couple of auto picks taking them early. But and finally for Wyatt, dropped Riley Cooper again. I think that's the third time he's moved him in and out of his lineup. and going with Hawkins.
I mean, if Hawkins has a decent quarterback thrown to him, then he's a serviceable, flex option, especially when the bye weeks start coming. But I'm not convinced that this week. I do believe that Rob Ryan is going to really dial up some blitzes and look to overload and confuse Hoyer as much as he possibly can.
And then, as a result of Riley being dropped, which is... It's a strange one, Riley Cooper, because he's even been listed. He's technically the number one there in Philadelphia on the depth chart, and it's.
Well, we know why Danby's picked him up. Let's be brilliant about this.
He's gone home.
A roster just filled with Eagles players.
He's dropped Kyrie Robinson for Riley Cooper. So.
I mean, the thing is that Kyrie Robinson's in a committee backfield, and Riley Cooper certainly made hay last year, and especially coming off the back of all of the negative off-the-field stuff that happened.
So one of those matchups this week, playing in Indy, I believe.
Yes, Monday Night Football.
Number of people thinking that's the type of game that just lends itself to a big, high-scoring shootout. So potential for a lot of points there if Danby puts Coops in his lineup.
Indeed.
Then there's only us two left to discuss. I've had a tight end nightmare and...
Well, there's no need to disclose that on the podcast, but...
Very true. So I've ended up with a double switch in my tight end chart. We dropped Ladarius Green for Dwayne Allen, and later in the week added Toilolo after Reed, struggling with injuries and...
He's one of those readers, isn't he? He seems to be one of those guys, really talented individual, but just seems to be constantly on the treatment table.
I just saw a quote from him, actually. He's fed up of having fluke injuries. So obviously not enjoying the injuries he keeps picking up. But Toilolo is one of those guys that actually, I saw snippets of him last year and really think he's got the potential to be a huge scorer.
What is he, 6'4"?
It's just going... It's almost like people don't think, because he's not going to compare anything to Gonzalez, people think, oh, he's not really that great. But I think he's, in that offense, he's a decent target, and they just haven't necessarily targeted him too much yet. Obviously, when you've got Jones, White, Douglas, got a lot of
Hester's now beginning to contribute.
So targets are low, but going forward, any injuries to any other receivers, and I think he could develop there. So for me, that tight end switches, and then also it was an early week pickup, taking Isaiah Crowell.
Of the
Browns, who I then switched and dropped back for Matt Asiata yesterday. So just kind of a few early punts there. I'm not sure at this stage whether Asiata's going to get a game for me, but almost one of those ones where you pick him up just so that nobody else takes him as well. So that's me, and that finally leaves you with defense change going for the Texans, who... That's the tasty one going into Oakland.
Yeah, even without Clowney, I think there's every chance that Watt's going to take over that game. And even if he's not necessarily affecting the game directly, he will indirectly affect it because they're going to shift that line across.
That is a big challenge for a rookie, having that monster around your face.
Something else, that guy. He's going to go one and down. If he carries on this trajectory, he's going to go down as one of the greats.
It's going to be a huge test for Carr, and see, actually, it's almost a good early test for him to see what he's going to be like.
You don't learn holding the clipboard. I don't believe in that one little bit.
Is that a little dig at the Browns there?
No, not at all.
Moving on as well, you've added a quarterback to your ranks.
I didn't fancy Cutler into 49ers after that, after I'd kind of hung my hat on him across the multiple leagues I'm in, and I do like the matchup that Locke has got there in Dallas, and I also added McCluster, my running backs are a little bit weak, so it's one of those is that against the Dallas D, does anything go? I don't know. We were texting each other, weren't we, on Friday, and going, man, this week. I just need Sunday to come so I actually have to make a decision who I'm going to start.
Too much indecision and tinkering when you got so long to think about it almost. But on the Titans, there, you know what, nobody talks about them. Nobody's talked about them all off-season. They seem to just spend the off-season getting bigger and deeper at the O-line and not much else yet.
Set of wide receivers now.
Nice set. With Wiz and Hunt offense taking over there, it could actually be a sneaky team there in that division, which isn't not convinced by everyone else in that division.
You take look out of that Colts side. What are they? They've got to be, what, a 4-5-1 team?
Yeah. And then again, if Wayne doesn't stay healthy, that's, even with Luck, it's kind of... He's got his go-to guy. And the Texans, feisty, but obviously, what can they do in the offense?
Yeah, and ultimately, I think Fitzpatrick is going to hold them back. And then if they do bring Castle in, we don't yet know who he is. It's one of those, time will tell.
Yeah, so the Titans are just a sneaky little team there because they've gone under the radar. And
yeah, and I don't think there's ever been a huge knock on Locker in as much as a footballer.
No.
But I think the knock's always been, you know, there's no point having a franchise quarterback that spends 8 games, with his feet up.
Yeah, not good value for that.
But they've got just before we move on, they've got a decision to make, because if he stays healthy, do they pay him? Because he could potentially hit the open market.
I guess I think a lot of that comes down to how he gets on having a new head coach there. Does he work with that system well? Do they match and get on? I think that'll play a lot into it. If he's not the type of guy that Wiz wants, then he maybe moves on. But You could see him if he can stay healthy and have a good solid season. Then.
Definitely ring for like a Kaepernick type deal in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But kind of, you know, year to year, pay as you play, but it averages out pretty decent in the end.
So that's all the transactions in Movistics this week. And just going to move on to our final topic of today's podcast.
Yeah, I wanted to do something each week where, you know, I've been procrastinating in my smoking room at home. And mulling stuff over and just bring something up and just thrash it around between the two of us. So we're going to delve into Kirby's Corner.
Now it's time for Kirby's Corner. And for week one of Kirby's Corner, you're going to want to touch on Tom Brady.
Yeah. You know, there's been rumblings about, you know, Brady's play potentially, you know, dipping a little bit. And I think you touched on it on the last podcast where you spoke about, you know, him taking team-friendly. I don't know if it was on the last podcast or no, we've definitely spoke together about him taking a more team-friendly deal. Yet, you know, Mankins is now gone and he's still thrown to essentially a ragtag bunch of receivers. I mean, Edelman looks great, but he's, you know, 2 foot tall, for crying out loud. You know, when are they going to invest some of these draft picks that they keep stockpiling and actually, you know, give Brady something? Because, look, they ain't building for the future. Brady needs to win now.
That is it. And then also, on interview last week, Brady, as Brady should, he's not going to lie about the fact that if there isn't a deal there for him and the Patriots do what the Patriots do well, which is move on from guys when they think their time is done and it's not value for them, that Brady could end up playing elsewhere. So alluded to that fact. But yeah, last week against the Dolphins, first half looked pretty decent and found his man Gronk again. It was more, the biggest thing last week I thought was not his receiver options he had to throw at, because he's got a number of different guys available now, but it was more that O-line that was just torn apart by Cameron Wake and the rest of the Miami team.
Is that a slant on the O-line of the New England, or is it just that front seven is of Dolphins are actually quite feisty, or probably somewhere a combination of both?
The only thing I would wonder is the timing of the Mankins loss. You spend your whole off-season knowing you've got that Pro Bowl guard in there, and a week before he's gone, it's like, oh, that must upset everything. Sure, you train and practice with other guys slotting in there and doing the role, but you always would have expected that guy to be there from day one. He's rarely ever missed a snap even, and that
ever present.
How long does it take them to just readjust to that guy not being there?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they're the type of organisation that will necessarily mortgage the franchise to get the Super Bowl, but I just think that, look, Brady's Brady. We all know what he brings to the table, but he ain't going to be around forever. And I look at what the Broncos are doing in terms of trying to win now with Manning. You know, let's be honest, Manning could walk away at the end of the year. You know, realistically, he's probably got this year maybe two more a stretch. You know, Brady's, you know, I think, what, a year younger, so maybe he's got, what, two, three more years left. Eventually, you've got to say, if he is our guy, we've just got to go put all our chips on the table and try and win.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they brought in Revis, who made a few good plays in week one, and obviously, they're not really using Revis potentially to his way we know he should be used. So
yeah, I mean,
that's
that
obviously
might,
one
that
great
might be
addition.
When they get Browner. Is Brandon Browner that they got over from the Seahawks?
Yeah.
He's on four games. No, again, just his
policy, bring him back. So they've obviously added a little bit there, but it's certainly not, they've not gone down the mortgaging the house to win now. So they have a more long-term vision in terms of just the team keep evolving, and they obviously, one believe that probably Jimmy Garoppolo will ultimately move into Brady's shoes, and if Brady doesn't win in his however many, 1, 2, 3 years left, they'll move on and not necessarily try to do everything to do it now. Just bringing it back to a fantasy perspective though, he was a top six quarterback for the last 4 years until last year when he finished 14th out of quarterbacks, having 11 interceptions last year cost him a few points, and you know their offense struggled a bit, so last year not the best being 14th quarterback, but he's almost one of those that he's just consistently scoring compared to a lot of the low end QBs, but he's becoming more of a mid-table.
Yeah, I mean he had 10 points last week. I think it's one to watch, definitely one to keep your eyes on, both from a fantasy perspective and just New England and what they do with Brady going forward.
I mean, one of the big knocks there was, it was the strip sacks that cost him a couple of points there. So, again, going back to that with Cameron Wake and the O-line.
Yeah, I mean, how much is that on him?
Yeah. The other thing with just Patriots as a whole, it seems, watching them recently and last year in particular, one, they've got an absolute gun of a kicker who can just win them games, and sometimes they maybe don't force it too much going down into the red zone, so it's going to affect Brady's touchdown points. But also, I don't see them being in too many high-scoring games, and they keep things close, and that, again, doesn't necessarily bode well for fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't think Brady's helped by the lack of a running game sometimes. You know, there's a definite lack of trust with Ridley, and Vereen's more of a scat back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Meaning, if you just look at it in our league, it's Tony with the playmakers. He's got Brady on his roster, and he's got Romo on his bench as well. So, I'm just trying to see if he's played, which one he played week one. No, he did play Brady, which actually, crazily enough, with 10 points was the best decision for his side. Tony coming away with 9.2, so just moving forward there, I guess. If the Cowboys click, then I'm sure Tony will probably move his boy Tony Romo to his lineup.
Indeed.
So, yeah, it was a good little Kirby's Corner there.
It was fun. Good stuff. Anything else you want to touch on before we wrap this thing up and you head on out?
Head on out, yeah. What are we now? We're only 24 hours away from the Sunday game, so
23 hours and 27 minutes.
Yeah, until the latex takes 3 hours to put this up. And then, but yeah, Wyatt gave me a tweet saying that, am I looking forward to my second loss? But I'm confident I can pull out a win in week two.
I feel better with Peterson not having to play against Peterson this week. All of a sudden, I'm slightly happier. I just needed to come so I can make a decision on these running backs.
I'm just quietly hoping Alshon Jeffrey's hamstring doesn't let him go for Wyatt.
Well, as a 49ers fan, that would be a big boost as well. So
yeah, with Marshall struggling with an ankle, I think, and could be an interesting game if those two can't make it, or at least be at 100%. So cool.
Right.
Bring on game day and the week two action.
Indeed, and until next time, it's been a pleasure as always. Sipping a tea.